So with that, we're going to move into our first case study to hear about what's been going on in Massachusetts. We'll be hearing from both Michael DeVara and Richard Weir. Michael DeVara is the project manager at the Mass Department of Environmental Protection. He has over 22 years' experience as an environmental manager in both the public and private sectors. He's currently leading Mass DEP's energy-saving efforts at drinking water and wastewater plants. He was a recipient of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Fellowship for Excellence in Public Administration at Suffolk University, and he holds a Master's of Science in Public Administration from Suffolk University and a Bachelor's of Science in Business Administration from Worcester State University. Richard Weir has been with the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District since 2000. During this time, he has concentrated on providing project management for the design and construction of district improvement projects, and some of the major efforts that he's led have included installation of new biosolids handling facilities, where all of the sludge is made into Class A fertilizer, which is really cool, investigation of structural adequacy of the defective pretensioning wires in a 72-inch pre-stressed concrete cylinder force main pipe, which is a little bit more technical than I would be familiar with. He's in a secondary system upgrade where surface aerators were replaced with fine bubble diffuser system and many other energy efficiency upgrades at the facility. He has degrees in civil engineering, and with that, I am going to turn it over to Michael and Richard. Michael, I think you're going to be muted.
Michael, we're still not hearing you.
Okay. Can everyone hear me okay, Emma?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that technical difficulty. What I wanted to do is just spend a couple of minutes talking about what we've been doing at the state level and working with our partners. Just for background purposes, in the course of treating 682 billion gallons of drinking water and wastewater in Massachusetts, facilities spend about $150 million a year on their energy. So from an economic perspective and also from an environmental perspective, it relates to about a million tons of CO2 annually, just to give you a perspective. On the larger side, we actually created a energy management pilot in 2007, where we actually brought together all the various partners from it was seven wastewater and seven drinking water facilities, and also our state partners, along with other resources, which included every major investor-owned electric and gas utility from across the state. And also a nonprofit and a university. So trying to pull the resources together that we can combine and leverage together. So this was a non-regulatory approach, strictly voluntary. So what we did is we, in 2007, just about the time that the Energy Management Guidebook was coming around and the Plan Do Check Act system, we thought it'd be helpful for Mass DEP to sort of pull the various resources together. And we were by no means an energy expert, but we felt that Mass DEP could take a very important leadership role to bring the right parties to the table. And we were focused on advancing energy efficiency as the first step. We also wanted to bundle any on-site clean power generation opportunities. And again, this was a learning process, and we wanted it to be a working model that we could replicate. And our goal was 20% reduction in costs and greenhouse gas emissions. This map here just shows you the distribution of the seven facilities, which does include the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, and Richard Weir, you'll be hearing for him today. And this was different treatment facilities using different treatment technologies and different size facilities, which we felt was important to get feedback from and figure out how we could help these facilities and what the resources that were available. We were fortunate to work with our private partners, the electric and gas utility companies, as Jim Horn had mentioned, and they agreed to provide free energy audits for these 14 facilities, both on the efficiency side, and we connected with another partner that did renewable energy assessments, looking at solar, wind, hydro, and biomass opportunities. And the results on the screen here show you what the opportunities that were identified from those assessments, just about $3.7 million of annual savings to the facilities. And you'll hear more from Richard on some of the details. Timing is everything in life, and thanks to leadership by Governor Patrick's administration and EPA, the Massachusetts Energy Management Pilot became a working model that basically led to the creation of the 20% green infrastructure requirement within the ERA funding. And what that meant specifically from us, over and above a national policy change, was that we were the recipient of, along with other states, of about $68 million to basically implement all the recommendations from these pilots, these 14 facilities. This picture just shows some of the examples. So on the renewable side, so small facilities benefited, larger facilities. There was every technology from wind, solar, hydro, and combined heat and power. The Pittsfield Wastewater Treatment Plant did some very important efficiency measures, and also a 1.5 megawatt solar installation, and they had anaerobic digestion, which they were flaring off the biogas, and they were able to connect into a combined heat and power system. So overall, they're saving just about $700,000 a year in reducing their energy and operating costs by over 90%. So they're on a pathway to zero net energy. Overall, the results, all these projects have been fully completed and are operational, and the 14 pilot sites plus 7 additional sites, the results are over $5 million a year savings. We exceeded our goal of 20% by 170% to 34% annual reduction, and importantly, at over 10 megawatts of green power were actually implemented at these facilities. So we show that this can be very beneficial, and it did create a pathway to facilities to show that facilities through managed energy efficiency and on-site power generation can be zero net energy or sustainable. From the pilot, we moved on statewide. We have what's called an Energy Leaders Initiative, which is basically we bring together. It's not a bunch of bureaucrats talking. It's really about bringing all the different partners together, the local decision makers. We have a technical presentation. We have an energy management planning meeting, which does involve the Plan Do Check Act, and we have a site visit. And this is an opportunity for facilities to exchange information and resources with their colleagues. And to date, we have over 100 facilities. If you look at this map, statewide, that are working with us, our partners at the State Department of Energy Resources, US EPA New England, and the utility partners. This map shows just over 100 facilities that are working with us to be energy leaders. From a sustainability standpoint, moving forward, we've actually are looking at trying to develop a very simple cash flow approach where energy savings can actually pay for the capital costs of improvements, leveraging all the different incentives from the various programs, both on the efficiency and renewable side. So this brochure is available, and it highlights a wastewater and drinking water example. But the important message here is that you can pay for wasted energy, or you can reinvest it in the people, equipment, and assets of your facility. And that's something that we all know that ERA money will not come back again. That was a great opportunity. But we really need to build something sustaining that facilities can actually go ahead and implement these projects and reduce their operating costs and reinvest those savings back into the facilities. So I'm gonna turn it over to Emma, who can, I guess, to Richard, I believe, and certainly welcome any questions once Richard has completed his portion. Thank you all very much, and my contact information is there. And I'd be happy to answer any questions either now or at any point. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mike. We'll get the questions together for the end after all the presentations have been given. So
okay.
With that, we'll move directly into Richard's presentation to hear specifically what was done at the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District.
Hi, good afternoon. At the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, we've been trying to reduce energy for a number of years now. Our treatment plant serves six communities in Massachusetts. We have a design capacity of 52 MGD. Average daily is about 130. Because Lawrence is a combined system, we receive up to 135 MGD during wet weather, and we are increasing that soon to 167 MGD as part of our long-term control plan for CSO abatement. We have secondary treatment capacity of 126, and we have a secondary bypass that we can treat just the stormwater. We have one major pumping station, pumps about 90% of all our flow, fairly large pumps, as you can see, and we have a sludge drying facility that makes a Class A fertilizer. Basically, the plant is made up of an aerated grit facility, two primary tanks, aeration, fine bubble aeration, blower building here, four secondary clarifiers, and chlorination and dechlorination. Our secondary bypass comes off here, if you're looking at the arrow on the on your screen, and goes down to a wet weather chlorine contact tank, and then is blended in with our outfall flow that goes out to the Merrimack River. We have three anaerobic digesters, four GT tanks. This is the heat drying facility that makes the Class A fertilizer, administration building, and processing maintenance building. In this portion of this garage, we have three dual fuel boilers that heat the, or actually reheat the sludge, and that is primarily used, the fuel used for that is the methane gas of the digesters. We have a small industrial boiler for heating and hot water that also uses methane gas, and the heat drying facility is the major user of any of the methane gas and to heat the sludge. We started in 1995 with a no action energy audit prior to my time. In 1998, the district embarked on the biosolids improvement project. We used to ship off all of our sludge, and so with that project finished in 2002, we were then making our own Class A fertilizer. We did a lighting system evaluation in 2001. We did a secondary treatment system evaluation in 2004. And then, as Michael was talking about, we were part of the a pilot program in 2008, did an energy evaluation assessment. The assessments that were done by through DEP were basically a basic type of energy audit. You know, it kind of a broad brush over it. Our board saw the benefit of doing this in the fact that our energy bill for electricity alone was approaching $4 million a year. And our board basically doubled the budget for ourselves so that we could do a comprehensive energy evaluation, which was very in-depth. We then did a lighting system evaluation, another one in 2009, and then we did a primary and secondary evaluation in 2012. The energy audit in 2009, as I said, was a comprehensive energy study. It came up with five operational measures, basically items that didn't require much money but were changes in the operations of the treatment plant. It came up with 18 energy supply measures that required capital to implement. And then there was two supply energy measures, such as participating in starting our generator up in high times. We use the EPA Plan, Do, Check, Act approach and continue to do that because you never stop looking at energy use. Part of our comprehensive study actually showed how our energy is where it's used at our pumping station, our treatment plant, and for sludge drying. And this was after the this energy audit was done after the heat drying facility was put in. It further broke it down into the biological system being the largest user of energy, not surprising. And then our natural gas was basically we use a little bit in the dryer building in periods when the digesters may be at the lowest capacity of holding methane in its tanks. And then we also looked at how we use our digester gas. And as you can see, digester heating was a large component. The dryer RTO is the heat drying facility. And then we found we actually had to flare off a fairly large percentage of that. So one of our energy measures was actually to capture some of that gas flare instead of flaring it off. Our energy audit showed some substantial savings. You can see here in the kilowatt hour savings as well as electric savings and a pretty good reduction in greenhouse gases. The results of our energy audit came in just as the ERA funds were available. So we did some scrambling to be shovel ready so we could take advantage of this money. We ended up hiring three engineering firms. They developed four construction contracts. We installed 23 VFDs to replace a lot of eddy current clutches. We replaced 19 premium efficiency motors, all larger than 25 horsepower. We did an energy management system as part of our HVAC improvements in the wastewater treatment plant. We did some HVAC improvements in our major pumping station and some VFD and premium efficiency motors on the HVAC system there. We installed KW meters on all the systems we did so that we could track what our improvements were, and you know, also it's a good benefit to see if something's not operating correctly and just how much power you're using. So we do track KW and actually is fed into our SCADA system where we can trend it. We've done two fine bubble aeration system upgrades. We've motorized the air valves there to optimize and reduce the amount of excess air going into the tanks, we upgraded some hot condensate pumps. We have hot condensate pumps that are taking hot water off the RTOs in the heat drying facility, and it shifts it back to the digester building where we use that to heat the incoming sludge, and then the dual fuel burners I had mentioned is recirculation of the sludge to heat that. And then we also replaced our plant water pumps, very large pumps here, 125 horsepower. Using a different control scheme, we were able to reduce them down to 100 horsepower and put VFDs on that. And we were able to actually reduce the pressure around the plant, which allowed us to go down 25 horsepower in the motors for those plant water pumps. We also installed a new energy steam boiler, as I mentioned. It's a dual fuel burner that provides heat to the buildings as well as hot water. We did some lighting system improvements, and we installed a 441 kW photovoltaic array system. We received $4.9 million in construction funds via ERA, which those of you that work with the DEP and EPA funds know that it covers both what would cover similar things to the loan program, which is construction costs and engineering during construction, but doesn't pay for design fees. We received almost $700,000 in utility incentives, which allowed us to pay our design fees with a net cost to the district of $0. without the payback or without the funds from ERAR and the utility incentives, the paybacks would have been 2.9 years on the project that we did. So this is kind of a synopsis of where we've been in, since 2000. We've done a number of these projects. In blue is the ones that were done via ERA funds. We also did a major project just recently of a 72-inch force main replacement. So in the last 13 years, we spent almost $67 million, and we got incentives from electric and gas utilities of a little more than $2 million. The DEP, the what's in red over here is what we basically got as a grant, and the remainder was a 2% DEP loan under the loan program. We realized some pretty good savings. You can see kilowatt hour savings on these projects is about $7.7 million, about $2 million in annual cost savings. One of my little pet projects was the replacement of an existing PCC force main, which had structural problems with the reinforcing, and we replaced that with a centrifugally cast fiberglass reinforced polymer mortar pipe manufactured by Hobus. Basically, the Hazen-William roughness coefficient was with the PCC pipe was about 100 and about 150 with the Hobus pipe. And just that project alone, you can see, had some pretty good electric savings with the fact that we got 800 horsepower and 1250 horsepower pumps pumping it up to the treatment plant. We also did a photovoltaic system. We have two different arrays. That was done in 2010 as a design build. We got 2,100 modules. The design build cost was about $1.9 million, and cost per watt was to us was 4.4 cents, which was pretty good. I was looking in the engineering news record this summer, and they're saying that larger systems are larger than 100 kW are averaging about $4.6 per watt. So we did pretty well in ours, and even the utility scale PV projects ranged between $2.3 and $6.8 per watt. So I felt pretty good about that. Our solar system saves us about $59,000 per year in electric costs based on 10.6 cents per kilowatt, which we're paying a little less than that now. This past year, we were able to sell our renewable energy credits and got an additional $32,000 and some odd dollars. And our solar system will generate enough the equivalent of electricity to for approximately 80 Massachusetts homes. And this is our two solar arrays, large one here and a smaller one out back. We're never finished here. We still have a couple of projects left on our energy audit, but we're also got other projects because of our long-term control plan for CSO abatement. One of the larger projects we haven't implemented yet, we still got some more studies to do to determine what size pumps we need to get up to 165 MGD. But with the energy audit showing the 80 horsepower and 1250 horsepower, if we put VFDs on that, we'd save about $1.7 million in kilowatt hour savings with about $240,000 worth of electric cost savings. And as I said, we got future projects as well as our for our CSO long-term control plan. And as it says in the Plan, Do, Check, Act, it's kind of, as the old folks would say with the old computers, it's a do loop. So you're never really finished. So we're pretty proud of our solar system and the reductions in our greenhouse gas output, and it works well, and I think that it's good for our future generations. So with that, appreciate your listening in on this webcast.
All right. Thank you, Richard and Michael, for your presentations. I really appreciate you sharing the experience in Massachusetts and at your facility. If anyone has any questions on the work that's been done in Massachusetts, please type in your questions for Michael and Richard, and we'll get to them at the end of the webcast. Before we transition to the Tennessee case studies, we're going to do another poll question. So, Wendy, if you could pull that up for us. We're interested in hearing about which of the following policies or programs or activities have been the biggest influence on energy efficiency planning at your facility. In the Massachusetts example, we heard about a state-run pilot program that was fortunate to have an infusion of public funds through the stimulus. And we're interested in knowing what kinds of programs or policies, or if there's been, you know, just individual initiatives at your facility or a particular strong advocacy in your community that's really led to the work that you're doing. So we'll give folks just a couple of minutes to put in their answers. All right, let's go ahead and pull up the results. So it looks like a majority of folks, about 41%, are pursuing energy efficiency as a result of individual initiatives at their facilities, followed by 36% as a result of state policies or programs, 19% local government policies or programs, and only 4% as a result of advocacy by community groups or residents. So that's really encouraging to hear that individual facilities, regardless of the policy environment, are taking the initiative, and it looks like states are showing some leadership as well. So thank you for your responses to